Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation with one of the most important people in the history of California, the highest ranking woman in the history of the U.S. Congress, and one of the most effective speakers ever. This is somebody who has transformed American politics. We're talking about Nancy Pelosi. She's a big supporter of Adam Schiff in the race for U.S. Senate. We talked to her about that. We talked to her about the big debate that we hosted this week. We talked to her about Donald Trump and where we go from here, the stakes for the races in California, and get some of her personal issues favorites, which was kind of fun. It is a rare treat to talk to her, and we really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you do, too. Here's the full conversation, which includes a lot of stuff we had to cut for TV for time, but it's really interesting. Speaker Pelosi.
Joining us now from the Bay Area, the Speaker Emerita and the Congressmember from San Francisco, the Honorable Nancy Pelosi. Welcome back to The Issue Is.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Alex. Thank you for the opportunity.
Let's start with the Senate race in California. You have worked with all three of the leading Democrats in the polls right now. Why are you backing Congressman Adam Schiff?
Well, Alex, for the past 20 years, as Speaker of the House for 8 and 12 as leader, I have had the responsibility to look out for California in a very serious way, whether it was appropriations, whether it was authorizations, whether it was formulas, whether it was waivers, whatever it was. Our state is big, 40 million people, full of ideas, full of challenges, full of, again, opportunities always. So I want us to have the strongest possible person in the Senate to look after California. In the absence of our dear Dianne Feinstein, who left us, she was very strong for a long time. And I, as speaker and leader, again, a strong force. So we have great members in the House, but we need our strongest possible person in the Senate with values, with a legislative acumen and skill, with the commands and respect of his colleagues. 70% of the California members, Democratic members, have endorsed him. I'm very proud to support Adam Schiff for Senate.
I know you watched our debate this week where we had all of the leading candidates on stage. What stood out to you at that debate?
Well, I thought that Adam was very senatorial. I thought that Barbara Lee was very gracious in her point of view, and certainly Katie was as well. We're fortunate to have three fine candidates for Senate. I was quite mystified by the Republican candidate, but again,
Steve Garvey.
I had never seen him before, except on the baseball field, and it was curious.
Curious. What do you mean by that?
The United States Senate is a very competitive arena. I know he knows about competitiveness, competition, and he talked about his being a team builder and the rest. But some of the skills that he has do not transfer into being an effective legislator in the United States Senate. To say that he went around for 3 weeks and listened to people, and that's what made him really capable to be a senator. Really, 3 weeks? I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years. We have to have people of all, shall we say, time frames and ages and all of this. But it's to think that 3 weeks of listening to some people was a qualification to be the senator from the biggest state in the union was some of the greatest challenges and opportunities, as I said. So it was interesting. The choice that the Republicans have made.
What is the nature of your relationship with Congresswoman Porter? I know sometimes she's talked about how the two of you would butt heads.
Oh, no. I mean, I have complete respect for all of my members. I don't put any of them in a situation, nor they would flatter themselves to think that I was butting heads with them, because I usually am not. I mostly am not. Every member is a vote, If not today, tomorrow is another day. So I treat them all with respect. I didn't agree with the characterizations that Congresswoman Porter presented yesterday about Congress not doing this and that and the other thing, especially in the last couple of years under President Biden, you would think she would have taken pride in some of what we had done, whether it was lowering the cost of prescription drugs and making sure our seniors had pensions and our children had a child tax credit. The list goes on. Protecting a woman's right to choose, and we still continue that fight. Expanding the Affordable Care Act so that many more people in a more affordable way can have access to quality care, which is a kitchen table for them. The cost of health care, the cost of prescription drugs, the freedom to have reproductive decision-making be their own. It's where democracy comes to the kitchen table. It's about personal freedom. So I was disappointed in how she diminished what Congress had done, rather than taking pride for any role that she may have had in it.
Last time that you were on our show, you called Kevin McCarthy the incredible shrinking speaker. How would you describe the new speaker, Mike Johnson?
Well, I think that Kevin's, again, shrinking speakership has taken us to a new speaker. And I say, I don't know him very well. I don't know that many people do. When he made his speech, when he was elected speaker, finally, after 3 weeks of no speaker, I congratulated him. And I said, Mr. Speaker, in your remarks, you mentioned President Reagan and a speech that he had made. I want to be sure that you had seen President Reagan's final speech as President of the United States. It's so remarkable. He said, I'm not familiar with it. I said, well, your staff can Google it or I can get it to you. But what it's about is that he said, this is the last speech I will make as President of the United States. That gets your attention when it's Ronald Reagan or anyone. I want to communicate a message to a country I love. And he talked about the Statue of Liberty and how we were preeminent in the world because we had attracted so many newcomers to our country because our door was open. We were constantly reinvigorated, youthful, and the rest. And when we close that door, we will cease to be preeminent in the world. President Reagan understood we are a nation of immigrants and that we have to have the laws and the policies to accommodate that. So I was hoping to get him to be more supportive of what President Biden was doing in his request to Congress to meet the needs of our country to secure our border, but also to accommodate newcomers to our country, which we need for our workforce and agriculture and other industries as well.
And President Reagan, of course, the last president to pass true comprehensive immigration reform, that was almost 40 years ago. What did Speaker Johnson say to you? Did he get back to you on that speech?
No, but he said he would look it up, and I assume, oh, he's busy, and he may have gotten around to it. I don't care about getting back to me, but I do hope that he would read it. I'll follow up. But yeah, you're right about President Reagan. You know, when Congress passed the bill, it was before I was in Congress, in 1986, the President Reagan and Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, they said, it doesn't go far enough. So they added family first kind of provisions to make it more accommodating for uniting families and the rest, test it in the courts, prevailed.
Sure.
But imagine Congress finally doing something, and then the president said, not enough, and then he prevailed. And that was the policy of President George Herbert Walker Bush as well, and President George W. Bush, but he couldn't get the Republicans to support immigration, comprehensive immigration reform, which is so necessary, as we all know.
Sure. One of the reasons that you decided to run for Congress again this time around is to try to fundraise for and help folks running for other congressional seats in California. Can you lay out the stakes of what the House is like, what it means for the American people, if the Democrats control the House in 2025 versus the Republicans?
Well, you ask a political question, but I'll answer in a policy way. One of the reasons that I ran again is I had really hoped that I could have conveyed the House in the majority to the next generation of leaders. We lost by 5 votes, even though the pundits said we were going to lose 30 or 40 seats. It wasn't so. They didn't know what they were talking about. But anyway, so I decided to go again because I feel very proprietary about the Affordable Care Act and what that means, that tens of millions of people had access to health care, didn't have it before. But even bigger than that, almost 150 million families have someone with a pre-existing condition. And this legislation is something that no longer has a pre-existing condition as a barrier to access to health care or have lifetime or annual limits on what insurance companies will pay for. Or being a woman is no longer a pre-existing condition. Mm. Or your child, if you have a child up to 26 years old, they can still be on. The list goes on and on about the benefits to everyone in our country who has health insurance, in addition to expanding those who have access to it. So that was my motivation. But in order for that to prevail, we had to win the election. And I wanted to be able to be active in 3 ways. One, mobilization on the ground. Just win, baby. Just get out that vote. And to do that, you have to have a strong message of what it means to people on their kitchen table issues. It means health care access. It means a woman having the freedom to have a right to choose and her the size or timing and if she wants to have a family. It means gun violence protection. It means protecting our planet. The list goes on. But there are some that have been really important in recent elections. And so the policy is the motivator. The election, winning the election, is the facilitator. And so you need to have the message about what it means to the families at the kitchen table, the mobilization to get out the vote, and the money to do it, the 3 M's. And that's why I'm here. I feel very excited about it, though, also, not just for the House, but to reelect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, President and Vice President of the United States. They have done a remarkable job for our country. And we need them there. We don't need Donald Trump, who says Obamacare sucks, to use his crude language. No, it doesn't suck. It cures. So you see my motivation.
It was interesting this week at the debate that Steve Garvey actually embraced Obamacare while talking about it. So there, speaking of the presidential election, there was a moment that went viral recently of Donald Trump likely talking about you, but saying Nikki Haley's name instead when talking about, we think, January 6th. Take a look.
Nikki Haley, you know, did you know they destroyed all of the information, all of the evidence, everything? Deleted and destroyed all of it. All of it. Because of lots of things. Like Nikki Haley is in charge of security. We offered her 10,000 people, soldiers, National Guard, so whatever they want. They turned it down.
Are you worried about Donald Trump's mental fitness? And what do you make of what he's saying there?
Well, first of all, 2 things. First of all, he has a cognitive disorder. It wasn't that he just had a slip of the tongue of using a name one time for another. Anybody can do that. But he was making a case. But really more dangerous than getting us mixed up, more dangerous was his charge that we were not accepting his troops. We begged him for hours and hours. Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker, and 2 leaders to send the National Guard. And he wouldn't do it. And his underlings, the Secretary of the Army and the Acting Secretary of the Defense, wouldn't do it. And they, for hours, people suffered. Well over 100 police officers were injured. People died. And then, not only did he incite an insurrection, but he lied, once again, about the National Guard. We don't have any authority to call up the National Guard. The president does. Governors of states do. And he wouldn't do it. And he either is misrepresenting the facts or doesn't know the facts, but he caused a big problem for our country, and he is not above the law. He should pay a price for that, and he should never step foot in the White House for any purpose whatsoever.
When you say he has a cognitive disorder, what do you mean?
Well, how silly is it that he's saying that she is, was that part of January 6th? Don't you think that that indicates something wrong here? And continued it and just reinforced the message. And it's not only that, the list of misrepresentations that he made is endless. But I don't want to talk about him.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't agonize about him. We organize about getting out the vote to win the House, win the Senate, and win the White House.
And let's wrap up just saying something fun about you, to get to know you a little bit. We play a game called Personal Issues. These are rapid-fire things. First thing that comes to mind to know you. So many people consider you their role model. Who is your role model?
Oh, my mother, of course. Wouldn't we all say that? But in my case, it happens to be true. She was wonderful, and she cared about our country, and she raised, well, she was a mother of seven children, but very, and my father, of course, was mayor of Baltimore and congressman and all of that, but she was the one who took it home to people, really. She was wonderful.
Oscar nominations came out this week. Do you have a favorite movie of the year?
Now, that is a level of politics that I am not equipped to deal with.
Okay. Barbie, come on. It's on brand for you. What is your favorite book of all time?
Oh, I have several favorite books, but the one I've been recommending, I don't know, the Bible, I guess I'll say. Wouldn't that be a safe bet?
That's safe, but is there something else other than the Bible?
Any books that any of my children have written. Christine has written books on organizing. Alexandra has written books on communications and the rest. So I would say any books Christine Pelosi or Alexandra Pelosi have written.
Christine?
There's one book that I think I want people to read. It's called The Age of Wonder, and it's about things that have happened in the history of the world that have been so important, things that are remarkable to behold, Age of Wonder.
And Christine's been on with us in the past promoting her book, which was great to talk with her. Last question, I think I know your answer to this. Do you have a favorite musician or musical group?
Oh my gosh. I have so many. And I love, of course, the Grateful Dead, and I love U2. And I've been to so many different concerts. But rather than tell you that, let me tell you the one that I never saw.
Okay.
Queen.
Mmm.
So I watched Bohemian Rhapsody maybe 15 times, maybe 16 times, just to hear the music.
Mmm.
And I had the opportunity maybe to see the current queen, that is...
With Adam Lambert.
Not the complete queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping that I can do that sometime soon. So again, I love the Grateful Dead. I go to all of their last performances. And I'm hoping to see you two at the Sphere in Las Vegas. But again, and then this week I'll go see Michael Tilson Thomas, who was maestro of San Francisco Symphony, to give one, again, his last performances. But I've been to his last a couple of times, too. Whether it's classical or what.
I didn't know that you were a Deadhead. I don't know if you partake in the experience of the Deadhead for some people there. But so as we say, thank you for being here. And we really appreciate the time and honor to talk with you.
Our thanks to Speaker Pelosi. That really was something. We've got also this week a conversation with Adam Schiff. We hope you'll download that as a separate podcast and let us know what you think about all of our shows. Like us, subscribe, tell people about it. That's how we get the word out. We're a little small engine that could, and we appreciate all the help we can get. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is.